as the measles outbreak sickens more than 100 people across the country. And in Mexico, there's been renewed debate over the right of parents to opt out of vaccinating their children.
Now, politicians are weighing in. President Obama has said parents should get their kids vaccinated. Republican Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey said parents should have a choice about whether to vaccinate their kids. And Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky said most vaccines should be voluntary and that vaccines can cause, he said, profound mental disorders in healthy children.
Faced with the decision about whether or not to vaccinate, parents confront a bit of an ethical question when that weighs personal choice against public health. Dr. Art Dersey joins us now. He's director of the Center for Bioethics and Medical Humanities at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Dersey, thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, Pranica.
Well, vaccination has been a very controversial topic for years, and it's come to a head once more over this measles outbreak at Disneyland. Why is the topic of vaccination still so contentious today?
Well, I actually think it's more contentious than it was in the past, and I think it's due to a number of factors. One is that back in the day, and I have to say that I'm old enough to remember this, that you saw kids and adults who had polio before the vaccine was developed. You saw people who actually had significant debilities as a result of encountering contagious diseases that at the time were seen as a scourge. And when vaccinations were developed, it was seen as something that was wonderful. And parents lined up to have their kids vaccinated against polio and other diseases because they wanted to be first in line to have their kids build up immunity to these diseases. So things have changed significantly. We, you know, are in a way hoist on the petard of our own success because parents don't see that anymore. And in fact, many adults have not seen cases of measles, although those of us who are older remember that many of us got measles. Now that there is a vaccine and we can prevent it, this is something that is available and a really good thing, I would not only argue but maintain. And at the same time, parents who've never experienced measles go, oh, you know, like, why should my child have to have this shot? Because I've never seen a case, and they live a healthy lifestyle, and, you know, they're not going to have anything bad happen to them. So I think that has changed in that way. And then, unfortunately, there was a study that is now a very small study and one that has been debunked over and over and over again. The study was retracted from the British Journal that published it, and the individual was lost his license to practice in Great Britain because he essentially found a link, and turned out it wasn't a finding at all, between the MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, and rubella, or German measles, and autism. And that spread like wildfire, and people believed it. And unfortunately, after study showed that this was not connected, and many experts and most leading people who speak on it, even from a political view, know that this was a study that was invalid, and the data was not reliable at all, and in fact, in some parts was made up. Turns out that that became a folk myth, and people went, oh, I know that this caused the autism in my child, or I heard about this study. And the problem, of course, is autism develops about the same time as these vaccinations are given, and so if you get a vaccination or give a vaccination to a child and anything happens afterwards, you go, oh, well, must be because the child had this vaccine.
So it's a mistaken cause and effect kind of thing.
Exactly, and not everything is cause and effect. And unfortunately, there have been some public figures who are well-known in the celebrity world who go, don't care what the experts say. I know what happened to my child, and this caused it to my child. And so the fact of the matter is that it has become a very hot topic. Oddly, it's not necessarily a political topic. That is, you know, both President Obama and Governor Walker say, get your kids immunized. This is this kind of thing that is straightforward. The science is good, and this is really good for your kids.
But then, on the other hand, you had Chris Christie and Senator Rand Paul saying, you know, they're a little less sure about it, especially
Rand Paul. Right, and you also have folks who live in Southern California, which probably tends to vote more in the Democratic side, saying, you know, we're just not going to do it because, you know, we're going to go with other approaches to make sure that our children are healthy. And in fact, Southern California has some of the highest rates of, or lowest rates of vaccination, highest rates of kids who are unvaccinated, hence the Disney outbreak, and hence a lot of other outbreaks, because there are kids who are not getting vaccinated. And sadly, you need, under the theory of so-called herd immunity, which basically says, if you think of human beings like a herd, if enough people are vaccinated, even if one person gets the disease, they're not going to encounter another person who's not vaccinated, and so it's not going to be passed along. Once you drop below a certain number, and it depends upon the disease what that percentage is, but with measles, people are in agreement that it's in the mid-90s that 19 out of 20 kids need to be vaccinated for something not to be passed along by the one who's not vaccinated. When it drops below that, then the disease can spread. And we've gone from a time when measles was extremely rare to when measles was in the double digits and now in the triple digits of kids who have it. And it is a disease that does have a small percentage of mortality. That is, kids don't die from being vaccinated against measles, mumps, and rubella, but they do die if they do get it. And the fact is that worldwide, there are thousands of children who die. In the United States, it's about 1 in 1,000 who get it that die, but we haven't reached that, you know, those kinds of numbers. But when we do, children will die from measles.
Now, I want to go back to your earlier point about parents not being able to see the disease. They don't see it, you say, and so all they know is that their kid has to get this shot, which is going to affect the child's immune system somehow. And there's competing information out there, as you say, that persists today. Do you think that the fact that these diseases aren't right there before parents' eyes, before the world's eyes, as much as they used to be, as in your example of polio, that this is sort of a breeding ground for misinformation and for fear?
I do believe that. And unfortunately, there is not a way to mandate that children be vaccinated unless you mandate that for attendance at school. But parents are, in general, making decisions about this for their children. And even though I think every pediatrician, every infectious disease specialist, every emergency physician knows that this is a very important act in keeping your child healthy, the fact is that until they have to do something like go to school, you know, or want to go to a camp somewhere, they aren't required to be immunized. That is, we don't, you know, require parents to do it. On the other hand, if there is an outbreak, they might be isolated and quarantined if they have the disease or if they're infectious. And unfortunately, measles is in this category where at the time that they're infectious, they're not badly sick. So there are some diseases like Ebola in which you are infectious at the point at which you're really, really sick. And so physicians and nurses often are able to make decisions about whether or not someone should be quarantined. And, you know, there was the case of the nurse who came back who, you know, apparently was doing well, but there was a period of time where they wanted to make sure that she didn't have the disease. But because she was not ill, it was unlikely, highly unlikely, that she had it. With measles, kids can have it and spread it to other kids before they get sick. So the problem is especially the case that we may not know when a child is spreading the disease. I'm sure all the kids in the Disney example were feeling fine at the time that they encountered each other, and only later when they were further along in the disease that they essentially started showing the symptoms. So this is another reason why immunization is important, is that even if a parent says, yeah, well, when my kid gets sick, I'll pull them out of school, they won't affect anybody else, and I'll just let them get the disease, they've probably already infected other kids. The infectivity of measles, by the way, is much higher than something like Ebola or other diseases, because over 9 out of 10 kids who have contact with another person who has measles in the development and spreading stage will develop it. So it is a highly contagious disease, highly infectious disease.
Now, right now, it's being framed more or less as a public health versus personal choice question, and the people who choose not to vaccinate feel that that is within the purview of their choice. Sometimes it's a religious belief. Do you think this is the right way to frame the conversation about vaccination?
Well, I do think that the balance here is between, you know, individuals' rights to be free from unwanted treatment that they may have, and other individuals' rights to be free from infection from people who have it. To use an example, if someone has tuberculosis, and amazingly, they themselves are not suffering from any particular bad effects from it, but they're spreading the disease like, you know, wildfire, we will put that person either under quarantine, or if they violate it, even confine them against their wishes while they're mandatorily treated to be able to prevent them from passing the disease on to other people. So the danger that they pose to other people as a result of this infection limits their choices in life. And actually, we've had a few cases of TB where TB was spread with someone who was even told that they were positive and told to stay home and to accept treatment, and the individual said, well, I'm going to a wedding, you know, so flying out of the country, out and back to go to that because nothing's going to stop me.
We'll come back and pick this up after the news. We're talking right now with Dr. Art Dersey about the challenges and the potential consequences of choosing whether or not to vaccinate children.
And we want to hear from you. Do you think parents have an ethical obligation to get their kids vaccinated, or should we look at this as a personal choice? Are you worried about what could happen if more people choose not to vaccinate? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking with Dr. Art Dersey, Director of the Center of Bioethics and Medical Humanities at the Medical College of Wisconsin. We're weighing the possible public health consequences that result when we make the individual choice not to vaccinate our children.
We invite you to join the conversation. Where do you stand on all this? Should parents be required to vaccinate their kids? Should it remain a personal choice? Weigh in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Dr. Dersey, but before we went to break, you were leaving us with some thoughts. Did you want to continue?
Well, I just wanted to compare this outbreak to something like someone with tuberculosis. At some point, and I don't know what that point will be, the public health concerns start to outweigh the individual choice concerns. And especially when, you know, either when there is an epidemic or when there is an active infection, both of those, the public health concerns is essentially how do we prevent other people from being harmed by this individual's disease or infectivity. And so, you know, I do think that it is a balancing. It's a balancing of individuals' rights to be free and to make these choices against the rights of other people to both be healthy, protect their children, and in the case of at least one individual whose daughter has a deficient immune system, he's asking the school to require that students be vaccinated against measles because his daughter can't protect herself by getting an immunization. So he's actually asking for people to think about her vulnerability because it's not a personal choice for her. She can't get the vaccine, and other kids, by not getting the vaccine, put her at risk.
Let's go to our callers now. I've got a lot of folks waiting to talk to you at 800-642-1234. We'll go first to Jan in Ashland. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I'm not against immunizations, but nowadays it's not just measles, and that's German measles. It's mumps, rubella, common measles, chickenpox, polio, whooping cough. They're given to 7-pound, 8-pound babies, And the insurance companies expect these to be given all in one appointment so that you don't drag it out to several appointments. I know a lot of young women that have made the modern, more intelligent choice to tell their doctors or to go to their county health offices and say, no, you're going to give them in some kind of a sequence where they're separated. We give children way more inoculations and immunizations than just measles, mumps, and rubella.
Great. Thank you for your point, Jan. And I'm a mom. I've heard this argument from other mothers that the fact that so many of them are given it at once, there must be some sort of harm to the immune system that gets overloaded. And just briefly, because we have a lot of people wanting to talk to you, how would you respond to that concern, Dr. Dersen?
Well, a couple things. One is, and I just want to correct something, it's measles, mumps, and rubella. So it is the regular measles and German measles. There is not any evidence that giving it sequentially is better for kids than giving it all at once. And it's given in such small quantities. Again, this is just an inoculation so that the immune system basically has a trial run with a small amount to be able to respond to it. So there isn't good evidence to show that spacing it out is better. Having said that, it's better to be immunized than not be immunized at all. So certainly I think they should talk with their doctors about their doctor's view of that, but there's not good evidence now that spacing it out is any better. And in fact, especially for some of these highly infectious diseases, the sooner is the better.
Well, thank you so much for that that call. And we go next to Rick in Dodgeville. Hi, Rick.
Hi. So let me start off by saying this. I'm not a doctor, but I think I'm a fairly intelligent guy. I've got two master's degrees, and I've given this a lot of thought over the years, not just during the course of this show. I don't really buy into a lot of the things that the medical community, you know, puts out there, as well as politicians, just because they're doctors. I don't think they've cornered the market on all medical knowledge. And here's why. Because if you go back a little ways, a few hundred years, there was a point in time where bloodletting was considered irrefutable science. You go back even further than that, and you find diseases that existed and people thought that they were brought on because the gods were angry and that we should have that they should sacrifice their children in order for those diseases to for the gods to take those diseases away.
So Rick, is the point you're getting to that science is fallible and that there may be more hazards to vaccines than we currently know about?
Absolutely. Science is absolutely fallible, and I think that 100 years from now we may very well find 100 years from now that they look back at this point in time and they say, you guys actually thought that by injecting small amounts of viruses into your bodies that was going to cure or prevent diseases? And they'll laugh at us.
Rick, thank you so much for that call. And Dr. Dersen, what do you say to that? Science is fallible. We may not have the whole picture yet.
So science is fallible. There's no question about that. However, science gets better. So there were a lot of theories about why people fell. The theory of gravity seems to work really well, and most of us kind of go, you know, I buy that theory. You know, like I think the scientists and the physicists are right about that particular theory. I mean, you know, we went to the moon on the basis of Newtonian physics, which has been pretty well established, and we pretty all accept it, although I have to tell you, it's just a theory, right? It's just a theory, and it happens to work well in practice. I think the scientific method is something that's come to the fore since the ages of bloodletting, and Hippocrates started us on Western medicine by saying, you know, it's not the gods. You're exactly right. It's physical causes. Let's try to find out the physical causes. So the reality is that we are on this scientific journey, but some things start looking pretty definite after a while. And again, I'm just using the theory of gravity as one in which we go, we accept that. You know, someday someone somehow might say there will be a better theory that explains everything. But right now, we're buying it, we're going with it. The scientific method actually decreased the number of people who have polio in the United States, decreased the number of kids who had measles, mumps, and rubella, and is curing a number of cancers, is helping people with heart disease. There's a lot of stuff that I think is being proven well. It is true that there may be things that we learn later on, and a number of them that haven't been subjected to the scientific method. It's because, you know, doctors always did that, and now we're looking and we're seeing, well, maybe antibiotics for that cold wasn't such a good idea because the cold is a virus. Antibiotics work against bacteria, and guess what? We need to just go with our scientific view that when you've got a virus, antibiotics are not going
to
help you.
And I'm just going to jump in here to make sure that we can get to another call there. Thank you for your call, Rick. Allie joins us next from Hudson. Hi, Allie.
Hi. I would just like to make a comment from, I guess, a social studies point of view. So when I think about vaccinization and participation in the community, I think that everybody has a responsibility to protect public health. So if you choose to participate in the public sphere, then you should have the responsibility to vaccinate your children.
Well, thank you so much for that comment, Allie. We also have a Facebook comment from Kara who says, if my kid can't bring peanuts to school, your kid shouldn't be able to bring preventable illnesses. So as a final question to you, Dr. Dursey, is there an obligation, maybe even some sort of legislation, do you think needed or called for to encourage vaccination?
So I think we have an ethical obligation to protect the health of others that we're going to be encountering. When you are ill, you shouldn't be hanging out with people for whom you can give serious disease, no question about it. That ethical obligation is one that I think parents understood for years. I don't know that we're at the point at which legislation would be appropriate, although depending upon the rates of the infections and as they go up, people may actually clamor for it. They may say, we want to go back to the old days where this was a requirement and people understood the social obligation. If they don't, we're going to impose it. I don't know that those days are here yet, but I do have to say that the curve, you know, to go back to the exponential rate of these diseases, is at some point there will be enough people who go, this is enough, because if they're going to go to school with my children, they need to be vaccinated just as I've vaccinated my child.
Dr. Dursey, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Veronica.
That was Dr. Art Dursey, director of the Center of Bioethics and Medical Humanities at the Medical College of Wisconsin.